Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Beda da Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It is Thursday, September 26th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, two-time Super Bowl winner with the Pittsburgh Steelers, James Farrier, is live in studio and joins Jeff Shepherd as we chat American football ahead of a big watch party in Crow Park this weekend. Rebecca Cray chats Association football as Athlone Town edge closer to a League of Ireland Women's Premier Division title. And Bernard Jackman previews this weekend's URC action. We'll also round up today's sports news headlines. Plus, we have the chance for you to win a copy of EA Sports FC 25. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can send us a text 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. It's great to have your company here in 2FM for the next hour of sport. Before we dive into our hour of sport, competition time. Because if you are a football fan or if you just love gaming, you'll know that EA Sports FC 25 is launching tomorrow. And you might also know that we've teamed up with EA Sports to give away a copy of the game every day this week. You can experience unrivaled authenticity in FC 25 with the most true-to-life experience of football's biggest competitions, clubs and stars. With over 19,000 fully licensed players across over 700 teams in more than 120 stadiums and over 30 leagues across world football, including our very own SSE Atricity League. So, to celebrate the launch of EA Sports FC 25, we want to give you the chance to win a copy every day this week. Plus, tomorrow, we'll even throw in an Ireland jersey with the final prize too. So, to be in by the chance to win today, all you have to do is answer the following question. Which club has won the most UEFA Champions League titles? That's 14 titles. So which club has won the most UEFA Champions League titles? Is it Tottenham Hotspur or Real Madrid? Text your answer, your name and email address to 51552 right now and we'll announce the winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for all of the details. So that's our competition news headlines before we chat to Bernard Jackman on this weekend's rugby in association football. The Irish Soccer Referees Society have condemned Stephen Bradley's post-match comments and referee Damien McGrath following Shamrock Rovers' 1-1 draw away to Derry City, accusing the Hoops boss of engaging in personalised vilification. In his post-match interview, Bradley lambasted a penalty decision, labelling it disgraceful and calling the referee the worst in the league and so poor. Last night, the ISRS president, Sean Slattery, issued a statement condemning Bradley's outburst, saying his comments should not be tolerated. Slattery went on to say, his personalised vilification in the media of one of our most valued members, Damien McGrath, in his post-match interviews has no place in sport. Statements like, he's the worst in the league, among others, should not be tolerated. The respect campaign needs to be more than words. So the experienced McGrath from Mayo has previously reffed the 2022 FAI Cup final and officiated at the 2015 UEFA Super Cup between Barcelona and Sevilla, assisting Scottish ref Willie Collum. Sticking with League of Ireland matters, Finn Harps are hoping to resume construction of their new stadium next year after concluding talks with the FAI and resubmitting their planning application. Harps initially had planning permission in 2008 when their stadium build in Stranorlar began. Numerous delays owing to the economic crash, COVID-19 pandemic and other factors has seen the project stall over much of the last 16 years. Last year, the club agreed a plan with multiple stakeholders that would see them emerge with €7.2 million for the build, including €4.7 million of a grant secured several years ago, and also using the sale of the current ground, Finn Park, to generate €1.6 million by the club itself. Donegal County Council is contributing €500,000, as are the FAI, and have asked the club to resubmit a planning application due to the length of time past and changes from the initial design. The FAI has also requested that the new stadium must be at a Premier Division standard when Harps move into the ground. The Donegal side will make a submission to the council in October. And finally, stepping away from football to the world of F1, Daniel Ricciardo's Formula 1 exit has been confirmed after it was announced he will be replaced by Liam Lawson at Red Bull for the remainder of the season. Ricciardo, an 8-time winner, will make way for Lawson at the next round in Austin, Texas on October 20th, effectively bringing the curtain down on a career that spanned 257 races. The 35-year-old Australian's future has been in doubt for much of the season, and Lawson, who's just 22 years of age, will be handed his chance at the concluding six rounds. So we are moving on to rugby, because it is a big weekend in the URC this weekend, as we look forward to Leinster hosting Dragons on Lansdowne Road on Friday. Tomorrow evening, 25-day kickoff. Ulster are away to Lions, 5-12 in the afternoon in South Africa for that one on Saturday. Munster are in Italy. They play Zebre at 3 o'clock on Saturday. And Connacht host the Sharks Saturday evening in the west of Ireland at 25-8. So Bernard Jackman joins us now to look forward to all of that, and indeed reflect on a bit of last weekend's action as well. We have team news in for Leinster, because they do play tomorrow. No team news for the Saturday matches as of yet, and Keane Healy will become Leinster's record appearance holder this week, with the Loosehead set to play his 281st game for the province in Friday night's meeting with the Dragons. Healy, the only change to the front row from last week's win at the Hive, replacing Michael Milne, who drops to the bench. He packs down alongside Gus McCarthy and Thomas Clarkson. James Ryan continues in the second row, with Brian Deeney joining him in the starting side. Will Connors comes into the back row for Scott Penny, where he partners Max Deegan and captain Jack Conan. Their new halfback combination with Luke McGrath replacing Jemison Gibson-Park at scrum half, while Ross Byrne gets a start at out half. Sam Prendergast, of course, away with the emerging Ireland duty. However, Charlie Tector continues at 12 despite his call-up for emerging Ireland this week, and the 22-year-old has Liam Turner for company in midfield as Gary Ringrose drops out. Jamie Osborne retains his place of fullback. Jordan Larmer on the right wing, while Jimmy O'Brien comes in on the left side of the pitch, replacing the injured Tommy O'Brien. Leo Cullen has also been able to give Joe McCarthy and Josh van der Fleer their first appearances of the season, with the Ireland international pair named on the bench. So Bernard, how are you, sir?
Very good, thank you. Yeah, a strong Leinster team with some exciting young talent as well. I think it's great that Simon Easterby and Andy Farrell have allowed Charlie Tector and Gus McCarthy to play tomorrow night before they hook up with the rest of the squad heading to South Africa. Just any game time they can get for Leinster, and likewise in other provinces in and around this tour, is, I think, to be valued, and it's the right thing to do.
We saw last week Leinster, they had the best gain line success rate in round one, the second highest rate of carry dominance, and the highest rate of tackle dominance as well. So dominance across the field as well. They managed to scrape out a breathtaking win as well. You expect more of the same come tomorrow evening, Bernard?
Yeah, look, at the Dragons, obviously, they got off to a flyer of a very difficult season last year. I think they only won 3 games in the league, but they beat the Ospreys in Rodney Parade, with very similar to how Ulster won. It was a try and injury time after multiple phases. So they'll get massive confidence from that, but realistically, I don't think their form on the road will be anywhere near as good, and not many teams early doors come to Dublin and get a result, particularly Welsh teams over the last few years. So I think the Dragons will be delighted they've got that win against the Ospreys, and they'll be looking to put in another good performance this week against Leinster. But Leinster last weekend, you mentioned the stats that back up, I suppose, what was visual to the eyes. I thought Leinster found it's quite easy to break down Edinburgh, and their attack, which we know was kind of faltering at the end of the season last year, did look to be sharp. And Tyler Blindale, the new attack coach who replaced Andy Goodman, he hasn't had a huge amount of time there. He was back in New Zealand for the birth of his child for a while, and obviously the internationals were a little bit late coming back after the tour to South Africa. But certainly what they put out from an attacking point of view on last Friday night against Edinburgh would make you believe that they've turned a corner there, and there's a real confidence and clarity around what they're trying to do. And the Dragons' defence isn't the best. So when you've got Jimmy O'Brien, you've got Jordan Larmer, you've got Jamie Osborne in your back three there, there'll be big pressure and onus on Luke McGrath and Ross Byrne to play with the tempo that Sam Prendergast and Gibson Park did last week. And but also, I think, really, Charlie Tector, for me, I know Gibson Park got the man of the match, but and he was excellent, but I thought Tector was top class. And obviously with the quality Leinster have at 10 with Harry Byrne, Ross Byrne, Frawley and Sam Prendergast now, he's kind of was a forgotten man, but he certainly took his opportunity at inside centre, and It's great to see Leo Cullen rewarding him with another start.
You mentioned Charlie Tector there, and indeed Tyler Blaindell. We can hear from Tyler Blaindell now, who's speaking to RT Sports' Michael Glennon, who touches on the influence of Tector and also the backline play last weekend.
I thought we used the ball well. We were well connected. The guys were working hard off the ball, which is always great to see. And yeah, I thought maybe some of the kicking game, we had a few nice kicks, which helped relieve a bit of pressure. So that was great to see in the back line. We're still trying to develop combinations, when to pull the pass, when to play through teams. So it's a little bit of communication, a little bit of connection, but I thought the skill sets were pretty good.
What about Charlie Tector? Some great moments in the match for him.
Yeah, I think it was great for Charlie to get out there. He had great support around him, and his work off the ball was particularly impressive. And then I thought he was really strong in the contact attack and defence, so I think it was his first start for him, so it's great.
How are you settling in at Leinster? You've been in Ireland before, obviously, but this is kind of a new setup, new camp. You've been here and you went back to New Zealand as well. How are you settling in?
Yeah, I've settled in great. I'm enjoying my time. It didn't feel too foreign for me coming back to Ireland, and I enjoy the people and the culture here. Obviously, I come back not as a player but as a coach, so that's been a bit different. It's a different kind of lifestyle, a different workflow to the week, but really enjoy it, and you know, I think it's going to be a good experience for myself and my young family.
What has stood out to you most? If somebody asked you for the one point that stood out about the Leinster camp, you come in fresh pair of eyes after three frustrating seasons. What has stood out to you about the Leinster setup?
I think off the field, they're still really driven as individuals, but as a team, they put a lot of work in. They do their own homework. They're really ambitious to grow their own game. And so there's no lack of effort on and off the field, which I think is excellent. You know, they haven't had the results in the past year, but they're attacking this year as a new challenge. So it's been really good.
Leinster assistant coach Tyler Blaindell speaking to Michael Glennon there. What's the biggest benefactor, I suppose, of Tyler Blaindell's coaching? Like, what will he impact on Leinster most?
I think he's very softly spoken. I think he's come from a very good environment, obviously, and he knows the Irish system, he knows the Irish mentality. Very popular player in Munster, very talented young player, but unfortunately had a serious neck injury, and he started to coach pretty much straight away with Gary Owen. He was doing some work with the Munster Academy. He was actually part of Razzie Erasmus and Jacques Nienaber's tenure there, so Jacques would know him well. Then went back to New Zealand and got stuck in. And again, it's not easy be a coach of a Super Rugby team at the age he was at. So they're getting someone who's got fresh ideas, but probably isn't a million miles away from what Andrew Goodman was preaching. You know, Goodman obviously had come through the New Zealand system as well. And I think Leinster's attack, well, just last year faltered a little bit at the end of the season. They've always been a team who put attack at the forefront of what they wanted to do. Obviously, when Jacques Nienaber came in, there was a focus on defence. And unfortunately, you know, their attack disimproved and their defence improved. So definitely over this off-season, they would be looking to get a better balance to their game. And as I said, you know, it's only 80 minutes, but certainly what we saw on last weekend would make you very hopeful that they're going to find their stride. There's no doubt, he spoke about the skill set of the players, their keenness to learn is second to none. They haven't been rewarded with trophies, and you know, the fact they've signed RG Snyman, they've signed Jordy Barrett, although he picked up an injury last week, so we're waiting to get real clarity around when he'll be back. He wasn't coming till Christmas anyway, so it's not the end of the world, but Snyman has a little injury at the moment as well, and then Ravis Slimani is on the bench again this weekend, and he's there as a security blanket, really. You know, Alatoa has gone to Claremont, Slimani's come in, and you know, the ideal scenario for Leinster is Tadhg Furlong is starting a big European game or a knockout game in the URC, and Slimani's there to finish the game, so it just gives them a little bit of comfort. So they've signed three internationals, two of them are world class, and at the peak of their powers, so of course there's going to be massive pressure. When you look at the quality they have, you know, around them, it's effectively the Irish team with two world class players thrown in. So there's pressure on Leinster, but unfortunately, or fortunately for Leinster, they won't get exposed until later on in the season, so they've lots of time to go and improve and test themselves to be ready for that, you know, real test, which is probably a La Rochelle or probably a Toulouse for sure in a European Cup game.
Yeah, I want to go through the other matches in chronological order. concerning the Irish provinces. Before we leave Leinster Dragons, just to mention, Dragons have revealed their Wales back row forward Ollie Griffiths is undergoing medical treatment after being diagnosed with a tumour on his spine. The Welsh Rugby Union say his condition requires intervention and he is unavailable for selection for the foreseeable future as he undergoes medical treatment. So just a note, of course, we wish Ollie all the very best from all of us here at Game On. In chronological order then, Ulster are away to the Lions, 11:55 a.m. Irish time kickoff for that one on Saturday. They got over the line against the champions in dramatic fashion last weekend. How will the challenge against South African opposition differ?
Yeah, look, it was key for them to get that win, even though it was obviously a very hard game on paper against Glasgow. The nature of it, winning in the 84th minute, the impact of the bench, the feel-good factor that seemed to be there with the players, the squad and the fans in Ravenhill, it just sets them off to South Africa on the right note. You know, the Lions were much improved last year and actually were better than the Sharks, but on paper this is the easiest fixture you're going to have away in South Africa, and I think Richie Murphy will certainly feel there's more in them, and hopefully the confidence they got from last weekend can help them get a win at altitude and you know, be two wins from the first two games and in a much more positive place looking forward to your second game on tour.
3 p.m. on Saturday, Munster are in Italy to take on Zebre. Munster made an average of 13.7 metres per possession in round one, more than any other team. They made a round high 15 clean breaks. So more free-flowing rugby on Saturday, Bernard?
Yeah, there will be, for sure. And Zebre, to be fair, put up a very good performance in their first game against Cardiff Blues in Cardiff. So maybe they won't be the whipping boys this year, which they have been in the past. I still think Munster certainly have the tools and the form to be able to go and get a 5-pointer away from home and, you know, have that perfect start to the season. There was elements of that performance that will have really frustrated Dennis Leamy, in particular, defence coach. You know, their attack, Mike Prendergast would be delighted with how easily they scored, but from a defensive point of view, there's a lot of system errors and missed tackles, which Leamy will have been very hard on this week. Their defence over the last 2 years under Leamy has been excellent, so you just early season issues there, just maybe a little bit of lack in match practice or different combinations, but I think they'll put that right this weekend and, you know, get a good win away from home. And the biggest issue for Munster the last 2 years, even though they won it 2 years ago, was a slow start put them under big pressure. You know, if they can go and win their first two, it'll just give them a little bit of comfort, and their injury profile is much better this start of season than the previous 2 years, which was a big factor.
How will Connacht respond to last weekend's defeat?
Yeah, look, they'll have got massive confidence from it, even though they were gutted because they felt they outplayed Munster, and it was a real opportunity to get a big scalp. But I think it will have also given them comfort that the work they've been doing in pre-season has paid off, and they've fixed some of the areas that were struggling a bit last year. The halfback combination of Ione and Ben Murphy was really promising. You know, Ben Murphy come down from the academy. Josh Ione was signed, you know, when JJ Hanrahan got injured, and he's an All Black. His ability to attack the line, I just thought it created a huge amount of space for the players outside of him. And Ben Murphy just gave him the tempo and the pass quality that they needed. So this is a tough game, though. The Sharks were very frustrating last year. On paper, incredibly strong, but just didn't make it happen on the field. They've now come into this competition. The South African teams didn't play in round one, but the Sharks, the majority of this team, did play in a Currie Cup final, and they won with a kick from 58 metres in the end. So they have silverware, they have that bit of confidence. They've recruited incredibly well. Obviously, Khaleesi's coming back from Racing. They've signed Andreas Esterhazen from Harlequins, the Springbok 12, a mountain of a man. They still have the likes of Estebet and many more top-end players. So if they've got it right, and if they really have identified and fixed the issues that held them back last year, and as I said, that Currie Cup win would lead you to believe that they have, this is going to be a very tough game for Connacht, and Connacht will need to not just replicate the performance they had against Munster, but probably do more, particularly defensively, where, you know, they allowed Munster score far too easily. So that'll be the big message this week, is be harder to break down, and if they do that, they have a cracking chance of I think it could be an Irish clean sweep this weekend of 4 from 4.
Here's hoping. Great stuff as always. Lots to look forward to. Bernard Jackman, thank you for taking the call. Just to mention on Connacht, former Connacht second row Gavin Thornbury has joined up with Premiership champions Northampton Saints on a short-term deal. From rugby football to American football, I'm delighted to say after the break, James Farrier, two-time Super Bowl winner, is with us with our own Jeff Shepherd. So don't go anywhere.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. You're very welcome along to a very special Eye on America. Jeff Shepherd is with us, as is tradition of a Thursday. However, we have a very special guest in studio, two-time Super Bowl winner, James Farrier of the Pittsburgh Steelers. James, how are you, sir?
Doing great, man. Just got off the plane over here to Dublin.
I say you're wrecked, so I say you're putting on a brave face here. No jet lag.
Not too much.
Good. Well, the reason you're here is because you're looking forward to, along with a heap of Steelers fans, a special watch party in Croke Park this weekend, because of course the Pittsburgh Steelers were awarded the marketing rights for Ireland as part of the NFL's Global Markets Programme back in May of last year. The Global Markets Programme grants NFL franchises access to international territories for marketing and fan engagement as part of a long-term strategic effort to enable clubs to build their global brands and grow the game internationally. So the Steelers returning to Dublin to host their second Irish Steelers NFL watch party, following on of course from the successful sold out event last year. So this year's event will be held in Croke Park, 29th of September, for the matchup between the Steelers and the Colts as well. So how much are you looking forward to just getting involved in this new Irish fandom of the Steelers?
Oh, I'm so looking forward to it. It's been a great experience being a sort of an ambassador for the Steelers, trying to build the brand internationally. We've been to Mexico a couple times now, and this is my first trip to Ireland, but I hear the fans here are very fanatic, and they are going to be excited, and I'm glad to be here.
What are you most looking forward to about your trip to Ireland?
My time in Ireland, I've never been here, but I plan on putting back a few pints and getting some good food.
Standard. It has to be done. And no better place to kick it all off in Croke Park. I'm sure you'll be sampling what Dublin has to offer. On the Steelers themselves, this season, off to a very strong start. How do you feel about their defensive performance so far, given their ability to just hold opponents to, I think it was just 26 points, I think, across three games, which is phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, what they're doing now is, if they can continue this and sustain this level of play, I feel good about how their season's going to go. Mm. Their defense has been playing outstanding, which I kind of hoped and thought they would do this year, and the offense is been surprisingly well, so I'm looking forward to a good season.
Mm. So you're hopeful that it'll be a successful weekend, a successful season, but a successful weekend in particular now against the Colts for this watch party.
Yeah, hopefully it's going to be a good game. I mean, if the defense shows up like they've been doing the last three games, it should be a good, successful game, and we should come out with a victory.
With Justin Fields a quarterback, how do you see his style, I suppose, fitting in to the traditional Steelers identity?
I think it fits in great. I think he's a hard worker. He's a guy that's going to manage the offense well. And, you know, I think that's going to be the main key, is just not having having too many turnovers, and being able to run the ball always helps your quarterback. And I think that sets up a lot of different things. So I think from that standpoint, if they can run the ball and establish the run pretty early in the games, that'll enable them to, you know, do a lot of other things later on in the game.
Mm. One of the big themes across the board, perhaps, has been the lack of passing touchdowns and explosive quarterback play. Like, is that something that you've noticed or been surprised at, perhaps?
I haven't really noticed it, but it sounds kind of refreshing because, I mean, as we know, it's a quarterback league, and, you know, passing the ball is very instrumental in, you know, building the game and making it more popular. But, you know, when it comes down to it, if you can run the ball and have a good running game, then that changes the whole dynamic of the game.
the NFL, again, and kind of in broad strokes here as well, from casual viewers or perhaps anyone tuning in that might be himming and hawing about who they might support, of course they're going to be following the Steelers now after this conversation, James. But the NFL has changed a lot since you've retired. How do you see the current state of the game? And also, what advice would you give to young athletes aiming for a career in the NFL?
The advice I would give young players is to just believe in your dreams, and you're going to have to work really hard to get there. There's only a handful of players that are very lucky and blessed to be able to have that opportunity. So don't take it for granted. Always work hard and be humble. And as far as the game goes, I think the game is in a good place right now. I think the game is growing a lot more internationally, and it's a fun game to watch, and I think they're trying to make the game as safe as possible. And you know, sometimes that means that, you know, there are going to be a lot of rule changes, but I think it's for the betterment of the game, is to grow the game a lot more and making it a lot more positive. So I really enjoy football. I like watching it, and I think it's only going to get better.
Do you think we'll see more international expansion? Like, do you envisage a place where we might see an NFL game, perhaps a Steelers game, a competitive game in Croke Park or somewhere in Dublin or somewhere in Ireland?
Oh, no doubt about it. I think the fan base here is ready for it. I think the Steelers are ready for it. You know, we have a rich tradition, you know, with Ireland, with our ownership, the Rooney family. So, you know, those things combined together, I think would make a great place for it. For some good NFL football.
Could you feel that Irish connection when you were playing?
Yeah, the Rooneys, you know, they have a great history of, you know, being from here and being immigrants from Ireland. So, you know, we've always known that. And, you know, Dan was the ambassador for Ireland when Barack Obama was the president. And he spent a lot of time over here. And we missed him when he wasn't in Pittsburgh. But, you know, he had a bigger job to do, and he loved his time here, and he said it was a great experience for him, but he just, they worked him a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine. But it's great to see it. It's great to have that tangible connection as well, and it is even better to see it continuing and expanding, and hopefully it is going to be another great event in Croke Park as well with this watch party. And as I mentioned, hopefully it is a positive result for the Steelers. When you reflect on your career, as I mentioned at the start of the show, two-time Super Bowl winner, obviously. Like, what's your most memorable moment of your NFL career, and how did it shape your perspective of your footballing career, but also life outside of it as well?
I think looking back on my career, I think the biggest part that I remember is it's not the games, it's the people. It's the people that you're around, the people that you come in contact, your teammates, the guys that you've developed these lifelong relationships. I think it's more about that than anything else. Football was a great, you know, avenue for me, and it gave me a chance to fulfill all of my dreams, and, you know, for me to have such a successful afterlife, you know, from playing football, it's been such an amazing ride, and I feel so blessed to, you know, have that opportunity, because, you know, it's only less than 1% that, you know, get that opportunity, and, you know, I definitely feel like it's just been a great experience for me, and, you know, it's something I'll cherish for the rest of my life. And for those guys that, you know, want to do it, just continue to follow your dreams.
Very few people get to play American football professionally. Even fewer get to actually win a Super Bowl, and you managed to win two. What's the moment like when you actually win a Super Bowl? Just that outpouring of emotion. What's that?
Oh, it's the unbelievable feeling. And, you know, one thing one of my coaches, Coach Bill Coward, used to say, it's not about the destination, it's all about the journey. And, you know, once you win a Super Bowl, I think you reflect back on all the things that you went through during the season, starting from the preseason, all the hard work you put in, and all the things you had to do to, you know, to get to that point. I think it all just comes back to mind, and it all flows out, and is very emotional and very positive thing.
How did each Super Bowl win differ then for you mentally and emotionally?
Well, the first Super Bowl in 2005 was the first one, so everything was new to me, and you know, I really didn't know how to react. The second one, I didn't feel those same emotions that I felt from the first one because I kind of already knew like what the feeling would be like if we won the game, but I did feel a little different. I felt more responsible for that one, and I had more of a blueprint in that game on the second time around.
You mentioned about the experience and the relationships that you build up over your career, and your coach kind of saying it's about the journey, not just the destination. What's the most important relationship you built up over your NFL career, be it with teammates or management or fans or friends?
I can just go back to, I can just look at my phone right now, and we have a pretty big group text of former teammates, and that's one of the things I'm most proud of, that all the guys that we might not see each other for a long time, and you know, years may go by, but we still have a bond together, and something that, you know, people don't might not understand, but we can pick up, you know, right back where we left off, like it was, like we've seen each other every day, even if we haven't seen each other for years and years. It's just that bond that you build when you go through something like that with, you know, a bunch of guys. It's something special.
Is there any event or moment that kind of sticks out in your head that really brought that group together and showed that camaraderie during those successful stints, be it on or off the pitch as well?
I think it was the time we spent off the field together. I think that was a lot of it. I think we had a very family-oriented atmosphere, and a lot of guys did a lot of things together off the field, and I think that built a brothership and a bond that really brought us together. And when times were tough, I think those are the times where, you know, we were able to gel together and work together and, you know, accomplish a lot of good things.
You mentioned when times are tough, and it's almost a cliched question, to be fair, but do you learn more about losing a Super Bowl than winning in some sense as well?
Yeah, as much as I hate to say that, yeah, you remember the ones you lost, and I don't remember too much from the Super Bowls that I won, but I definitely can play back in my head that almost the entire game of the one that we lost. And
it's still kind of that clear in
your
mind.
Like it was yesterday, and you think about those things, but you know, as time progresses, it does feel good just to be able to say that, you know, you were able to play in the Super Bowl, even though you lost. It's still a good feeling.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, on that note, James, before I do let you go, just on Crow Park as well, if anyone's thinking about getting down, like what's the occasion like of these watch parties as well? It's not like a tailgate party now as well. It might be a bit different, but it's still as raucous, still as boisterous, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be very energetic. It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, it's just a time for Steeler fans to let loose and show your support and really cheer for your team. And we've been doing this for a while now, and it never disappoints.
Well, long may it continue. James Wright, you're a gentleman. Thank you so much for popping into the studio. Really appreciate it. It's going to be a cracker of a watch party at Crow Park. As I mentioned, Steelers against the Colts. Lots to look forward to. For now, James, thanks again for popping in. We're taking a short break, and then we're going to turn our attention to Association Football with Rebecca Cray.
Game on.
Football.
Now it is time to chat football on this evening's show. Rebecca Cray is with us. Rebecca, how are you?
Yeah, all good, Shane.
Looking forward to a big weekend of League of Ireland Women's Premier Division action. Before we look forward to that, a big match last night. Wexford 1, Athlone Town 2. Brenda Tabe, the hero for Athlone in Wexford. The league title almost wrapped up. So the permutation is this weekend. If Athlone Town win, and Galway and Shells, who are playing each other, draw, then the league title is Athlone Town. Do you feel that perhaps yesterday was the last kind of stumbling block or hurdle that Athlone Town really needed to get over?
Potentially, yeah. I suppose they've 3 games in 5 days this week. You know, obviously coming off the back of playing a semi-final of an FAI Cup there on Sunday in Sligo, and I think they made one sub in the 84th minute. So I think you were kind of looking at last night's game, thinking, will they get through it? You know, going down to Wexford, who are a tough a tough outfit, obviously diminished slightly without Ella Malloy in there. You know, so it was a case I think people were looking to say, would this be the slip up that Lowe might make? But looks like they have one hand on the trophy firmly at the minute, and it's more or less in their hands. So yeah, look, obviously this weekend with Galway Shells playing, you don't know what way that's going to go, well, given obviously Shells beat them the last time down there, but it's a different kettle of fish this time round. I think both teams will know what's at stake. And obviously then at Lone we'll be playing after them as well. So it'll be a case of, you know, who comes out of Galway Shells. If either team win, they'll still be breathing down the necks of at Lone. But yeah, if it's a case of a draw, it's more or less at Lone's then.
I know you can probably more so speak from a Shelburne point of view, but do you feel Shells and Galway genuinely believe that they can still win it? I know mathematically they can, but I would imagine that belief might be on the floor realistically.
Yeah, like I know from air camp it's a case of just taking each game as it comes and keep focused on that and keep focused on ourselves, because that's all we can control. You know, you just can control the controllables. And I think in the back of people's heads you'll always know that alone have that little bit of an advantage. And you know, going into that game on Saturday, it will be tough, you know, playing in Galway for Shells. But look, these girls have done it year in, year out. You know, this is the first kind of rodeo, I suppose, for Athlone. They've been knocking on the door, as have Galway, for a long time. But I know from a Shell's point of view, it's very much keep the heads down, you know, focus on ourselves and see what happens. As I keep mentioning, back in 2021, we were 11 points behind with about 6 or 7 weeks to go and managed to pull it back on the last day. But look, given the way things have been falling for Athlone recently, you know, they seem to be getting every chance. You know, you can't say it's all luck, but it's been falling for them a lot in the last few weeks, but it could be their year.
So Galway host Shells at 4:45 on Saturday, live in TG Cahir, and then Athlone will know what they need to do if that is a draw. If they defeat Shamrock Rovers at 7:30 at home, they will be crowned league champions. But as you mentioned there, if either Galway or Shells are victorious, still going to go on to 41 points, and then the pressure's back on Athlone then at 7:30 that evening against Shamrock Rovers. Just on Athlone's season, and I know they have a cup final coming up against Shells and they are likely to be league champions, but as we mentioned again and again, not confirmed as of yet. What's impressed you most? Like, what has Athlone in the position they're in?
They just find a way to win, you know, no matter what. Like, they've lost a few players in recent weeks, but they still dig it out. You know, they've relied heavily, I think, on the likes of Maddie Gibson, who's shone through in a lot of games and delivered for them, whether that be assists or goals. Obviously, Brenda Tabe has been a bit of a revelation for them, you know, up top. They've kind of been searching for that out-and-out goal scorer. Obviously, had Casey Howe for a period of time before she left for England. But, yeah, they just have found a way to win. It might not have been pretty most of the time, and you know, I think you can kind of look at the likes of Shells, who play that nice football, and you know, we've even dug out games where we've not maybe meant, or you know, probably didn't deserve to win games, but we've came through. But I think for me, it's just finding that will to win in that loan, and they dig deep. They're in your face constantly, you know, not the prettiest, but they work hard, and I think that's crucial if you want to go on and win games. Look, you can talk about luck all you want, you know, and how the ball falls for you, or decisions that go against you and go for you or whatever, but yeah, they've just found that way to win, and I think it's just going to be a case of how they handle this pressure now for the next 2 or 3 weeks. As I said, they've not this kind of uncharted territory for them, but you'd more or less say it's all in their hands at the minute.
Yeah, they've handled the pressure quite well and thus far. Efficient performances to date. How much credit goes to the management team in that regard?
Yeah, you'd have to give a lot of credit to them. Look, I kind of talk about Tommy Hewitt even before Kieran Kilduff. You know, he kind of brought them through in the previous 2-3 years and kind of brought them from that team that were getting beaten probably week in, week out, and just brought in a few bodies that maybe, you know, could knock the ball around a bit more and just gave them that sense of belief, I suppose, when they got into the first final of the FAI Cup there 3 years ago. I think they got that, you know, sense of belief in themselves that they could actually go and beat teams. And obviously with Kieran coming in, he's brought in a new kind of modern coaching style and instilled even further belief in them. And obviously, you know, he's got great players in great positions, and they just seem to gel really, really well. You know, Laurie Ryan in centre midfield, you know, she's just that kind of Rachel Graham-esque kind of, just sweeps up and does that dirty work and just allows the likes of Roisin Molloy or Maddie Gibson to go and play that free-flowing football and attacking football. And obviously Chloe Singleton was in there as well until she unfortunately got injured. But yeah, look, you have to give massive credit to the coaching staff as well. But we'll see how we go.
Yeah, I think we talked for so many years about Rachel Graham, Karen Duggan. I think Laurie Ryan's certainly in
Kylie Murphy.
Kylie Murphy in Wexford as well. That conversation in that category as well. You mentioned the FAI Cup. I want to get your thoughts on last weekend's semi-finals at Lone. Shauna Brennan deflected shot enough for a 1-0 win in the Showgrounds. Were they fortunate to get over the line against Sligo?
Do you know what? I was down there covering it and I was looking at it, and Sligo were very unlucky in that second half not to come away with something. Mm. You know, I was looking at Lone. Sorry, they were... looked at kind of on the bare bones in the second half. You know, they were, I think they'd one sub, as I said, they made in the 84th minute, and they just didn't seem at the races. You know, Sligo just looked right up for it. As I mentioned, I think on air last Sunday, Miriam Devaney was excellent against her former club. She was all over the park. You know, she was kind of making a statement more so, you know, that she still got a bit about her. But Sligo really unfortunate. They kind of went for it at the end, put two up top, made about four changes in the last 10 minutes as well. At Lone managed to scrape through, and look, it was unfortunate for Sligo. That was a deflected shot that got At Lone over the line. But all credit to Sligo for putting it up to the At Lone team that they did. It's another final for At Lone.
Yeah, you wouldn't have thought that Sligo, no wins in the league, points in the board, bottom of the table.
Not watching that. And I think people are probably looking at that league table going into that game going, Jesus, it's going to be a whitewash. Once At Lone score one, they're, you know, the floodgates are going to open, But Sligo definitely held their own, and they can take a lot of positives from that game.
It was a bit more one-sided in Talca Park as Kate Mooney opened the scoring with a lovely flicked finish. Noelle bagged a brace. Christy Gray had a stunner and a Megan Smith-Lynch free kick to wrap it off. A 5-0 victory over Cork City. Is this a rootlessness that perhaps we don't always see from Shelburne?
Yeah, I think in the latter end of the season, bringing the likes of Kate Mooney in, you know, to the forward line has been a revelation for us. She's been so clinical in front of goal, and it's those kind of like, you know, goals that you're getting in around the 6-yard box that we probably didn't get in the earlier part of the season. Just those strikers goals, you know, getting across the front post, scrappy kind of interactions in the box that Kate is fantastic at, and she throws her body on the line, and that's what was really, you know, impressive for me. Obviously being the backroom team, watching us be so clinical in front of goal. Obviously Noelle, being Noelle, you know, getting the two goals, could have had three or four. And obviously then the class of Christy Gray outright. She's done really well in the last four or five games, you know, really attacking, not afraid to go at the fullbacks, and just takes that ball inside to finish well on her left. And what can you say about Megan Smith-Lynch? She'll talk about that one for a while, the free kick. It was an absolute stunner, but I think it's been really positive, you know, with Shells now, the fact that they're being rootless and not just settling for one goal. And I think that's what maybe was the case in the earlier part of the season when we were getting those, you know, 1-2-0 wins or, you know, certain draws. Maybe I think that has maybe been the kind of the downside of it. But really good end to the season so far, or coming up to the end of the season, I suppose, for Shells, and hopefully can carry it on for the last few games in the final as well.
Two cracking free kicks and two cup games now for Megan Smith-Lynch. No pressure in the final.
I know. She'd be itching. She'd be on every free kick now, whether it's in her own half or theirs.
What's going to be the deciding factor in the Galway-Shells match on Saturday in the league? So
I think, like, any time that you play against Galway, it's just about wanting it more. You know, like, we can play all the football we want, and Galway as well have adapted to a new style of play of, you know, just releasing those forwards early, the likes of Julianne Russell and Aisling Meaney up top, and Emma Doherty, obviously, are three really big goal threats. And look, it's just a case of determination and that pure grit, I suppose, that comes into these kind of games, because you can cancel each other out in your style of play. Obviously, in the previous game that Shells played against Galway, I think it was probably our best game of the season, football wise, you know, just played on the front foot from the get-go, and, you know, just stopped anything coming in behind our own defence. So it's just, as I said, look, just sticking to the game plan for both teams, but cancelling each other out would be a case of just who wants that more on the day. And obviously, with it being live on TV, it just adds that added incentive as well.
Shamrock Rovers going into it off the back of a win last Saturday. That was the only league fixture. Stephanie Zamber scored as Rovers beat DLR Waves 1-0. So as we mentioned, they're away to Athlone at 7:30. Elsewhere though, Cork City host DLR at 2:00 on Saturday. Bowes host Wexford at 3 p.m. I want to ask you though about the 2:00 fixture between Piemont going to Sligo. Can the performance of Sligo's Cup semi-final match galvanise them in a way, or might it be of a case of, we've tried so hard and we still couldn't get over the line?
Yeah, like, looking at that game on Sunday, that's probably the pinnacle of their season in terms of their performance. You know, you'd like to think that it might galvanise them, or will it be a case that they've kind of reached the mountain now and they plateau again? But you'd like to think that it will galvanise them. Obviously, you know, coming into it against Piemont have been that mid-table team for this season. Obviously did well in Champions League, but they'll still be going down to Sligo to try and see out this season on a high. With Sligo, look, they'd be very much coming off the back of that, like they were down to bare bones as well. You know, they're a very, very young team. So look, once they keep the likes of Emma Hansbury on the park, who kind of, I think, makes things tick for them. She's obviously a seasoned professional now within the game, and you have a few other players in there. I think Kerry Lockery was fantastic for them as well in that game on Sunday. So look, if you can release those kind of players to kind of be on top of their game, they could most certainly put it up to Piemont.
Okay, well, we shall see if the league is decided this weekend. If not, Shells host Pease next weekend. Galway away to Treaty Athlone, Bows. And it does go to the final day of the season. Galway Athlone on the last Saturday.
It
is. And Rover Shells as well.
Yeah,
some cracking matches. Some cracking matches. Listen, Rebecca, before I let you go, there's some cracking matches in the UEFA Women's Champions League this evening. Manchester City 5 up on aggregate against Paris. Celtic host Vorskla Poltava. And they are 1-0 up. Session Noonan with Celtic, and Kenny McCabe and Arsenal, and they host BK Hackett. They're 1-0 down, so pressure on Arsenal.
Yeah, most definitely. I think they'd be looking to come back in that game. Obviously last year they went out the first round as well, and they weren't too best pleased. I think when you're at Arsenal you have these expectations, and there's a sense of pressure, I suppose, to get further or get as far as possible in the Champions League, and that's the kind of team they are, and they'd be, I'm sure, going into this game to try and get that win at home and progress.
Great stuff. I'll let you go, Rebecca Craig. Thanks so much.
Cheers,
for coming in the studio to chat to us. It should be a cracking weekend of League of Ireland Women's Premier Division action if you are around Cork, Sligo, in the Daly Mount area of Fisbury, Galway or Athlone. Do attend a match.
Game on.
Football.
Now, we didn't get a mention, a chance to mention, I should say, Troy Parrott being the hero for AZ Alkmaar. Yet again, he scored the winning penalty in a 3-2 win in the Europa League over Elfsborg last night. Manchester United were frustrated at home to FC Twente in their Europa League clash. There's a host of Europa League matches on this evening as well. Fenerbahce are currently 1-0 up against Union Saint-Gilloise, and Rangers currently lead away to Malmö by a goal to nil as well. Spurs host Karabag this evening at 8 o'clock, and Ange Postecoglou was speaking about the London club's return to Europe.
It was rare for Spurs last season. You obviously joined the club with them not in Europe. How much are you looking forward to? Spurs have a real good, big relationship with European football. Won this competition twice.
Yeah, no, really sort of pleased to be back there. Excited about being back in it. I spoke about it last year that, you know, it was a real gap in our sort of calendar, and I think didn't help us at certain times of the year not having that sort of regular football and that challenge of, you know, playing against different types of opposition and sort of, you know, exposing our whole squad to some, you know, real meaningful game time. So for a number of reasons, and you know, the worst thing was sitting around watching other teams playing it. That didn't sit well with me either. So being back in European competition is important.
I know you have touched on it, but Son was really passionate then. I know you mentioned it in the fans forum, but it is an expanded competition. Son particularly mentioned about the player welfare and maybe the dip in quality. Do you echo what Son and other players, Rodri Alisson, have been saying about this extended format of these competitions?
Well, not specifically to this competition, but, you know, I've spoken already about the fact that I think we're getting to a real sort of dangerous level of what our expectations are around players. And, you know, instead of sort of focusing on one or two tournaments, it's about the calendar. You know, that's more of an issue. Players don't get a break between seasons anymore than they used to. There's more tournaments, both at international and at club level, at continental level. So, you know, like I said, it's going to get to a point where, you know, we're not going to have the best players out there playing, and more, probably even worse, is, you know, them breaking down for various reasons. So it's definitely something that needs to be addressed.
Done. On that, Ange, you said last night that players will take matters into their own hands if things don't change. I mean, what does that look like? Is that a strike?
I said players may take that. I didn't say they will. I said they may take matters into their own hands. And it's about us, I guess. Yeah, you know, they're the ones most affected, to be honest. So, you know, you'd understand if they start, you know, as a collective thinking about, well, how much of this are we going to sort of continually you know, not have a say in. And it's like anything else in life, I guess, you know, if you're affected, and it is the players that are affected, you know, we have a responsibility as clubs, as managers as well, to make sure that we protect our players from that as well. So it's the reason we have squads. So, you know, we've got to be mindful of, we can't on the one hand sort of bemoan the fact that, you know, we have so many games, but we want to be in all competitions, and at the same time we don't use our squads, because I think, you know, we end up being complicit in that.
So Spurs host Karabag, elsewhere, Roma at home to Athletic Club de Bilbao, Ajax at home to Besiktas, Victoria Pilsen are away to Eintracht Frankfurt, Steaua Bucharest play RFS of Latvia, Maccabi Tel Aviv away to Braga, and Lyon, as Kieran from Meath texts in, they haven't been the same since Jake O'Brien left. They are really struggling there at home to Olympiacos. Just to mention our competition winner, massive congratulations to Orla O'Donnell, who gave us the correct answer of Real Madrid as the team that has won the most UEFA Champions League titles. If you missed out today, tune in tomorrow, where there'll be another chance to win a copy of EA Sports 25 and indeed an Ireland jersey from all of the Game On team. It is bye for now. We're going to check in with the news desk, and then the new music shows up next with January Winters.